Hello and welcome to the first edition of Yes Chef, a new podcast in a series covering the catering industry from within. My first guest is a very good friend of mine, Chef Sam Rom, formerly a chef with Jamie Oliver and head chef at River Cottage Canteen, now running his own business offering private dining experiences. We had a great chat covering all kinds of things from chef temper tantrums to 46-hour days and even the joys of washing pots. So please do enjoy. Okay, so I'm with Chef Sam Rom.
Hello.
So we're going to talk about your history with chefing, your relationship with food, and where you're up to now and where you want to go with it. So we'll start right back at the beginning. When did you first start working in a kitchen?
I first started working in a kitchen when I was just turned 15. I started washing pots at the Sheaf in Northampton.
Okay. How did you get that job?
Newspaper advert.
Can you remember how much it paid now?
£3.25. And my first shift was on a Wednesday and I got £16.50.
What did you spend it on?
I don't know, but I was loaded. Like, I can remember getting in the car, Dad picked me up and I was like, cha-ching!
My first job was at the White House Hotel in Charmouth, washing up.
Yeah.
I was 13, so I got £2.25 an hour.
Oh!
1998, man. But I went and bought something like 6 king-size Mars bars the next day. I was, yeah.
Legend.
So what was that first shift like? Did you end up leaving buzzing? Did you not really care?
I was washing pots by hand. Didn't have a dishwasher or anything. And I was just, I got there. I was very quiet, a bit shy. It was a very noisy, loud kitchen.
How many people in it?
2, 3, 4. There was 4 chefs. And then there must have been about 3 or 4 front of house. But it's the first time, you're a kid, you're hanging out with adults.
Yeah.
So it's really strange.
So that's interesting, actually, because the minute you're in a kitchen, there is no kind of age reference. You don't go, oh, he's just a kid. That's it, you're part of the team.
Although I was only like maybe 5 foot just. maybe 4'11".
Oh, so you've grown a couple of inches since. Yeah, you're 5'2" now.
Like, yeah, massive. Yeah. Yeah, it was horrible. I remember I stunk. My hands reeked. Like white, wrinkly dishwater.
One of the worst things is when you finish the wash up and you've got to clean out the gunk at the end of the night. And I used to hate that. Had you any intention of going to work in kitchens or do anything kitchen based before you got that job?
Nope.
Did you cook at home at all?
Bit. At home, yeah. Obviously, mum cooks a lot. And so from a big family, dinner's a very important thing. So I've always kind of got involved with cooking at home. Mainly the old pavlova.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
So at the Sheaf, you did pot washing. Is that all you did there, or did you go on to do anything else with them? Did you learn any skills? Or?
Well, I actually ended up staying there for 5 years. I became... I was running the kitchen by the time I was like 18. They showed me everything to do with the restaurant. So I did... They trained me front of the house. They trained me maitre d'. They trained me behind the bar. I went all the way up through the kitchen, through every single section, till I was up onto mains, like we'll call like the sauce section. It was all a bit old school there, but it's onto sauce when I was about 18.
So would you say you were trained classically then?
No, that wasn't really classic training. I think that was, you kind of get, you make this dish, you make this dish. I don't think it's classic training in the sense of what people would now call classic training. That's old school French beasting.
That's a catering term, beasting.
Yeah.
What's beasting mean?
It's when it goes in with no lubricant.
Synonymous with dry.
Yeah. It's pretty dry. It hurts.
You've been beasted. There's no accidental beasting. There's no.
You can feel it for a while. You walk funny.
So you had quite a journey then with that one.
Yeah.
How long was it into that job that you realised it was something you wanted to pursue?
And there was about 4 years after.
Really?
I never ever wanted to be a chef.
Really?
Oh, I went to university after that, and then still on my holidays I went back and worked. It was just something I did. It was never a plan to be a chef.
When would you say then you started getting the aspiration to chef, or at least the inkling to start doing it properly, to commit to it?
So I've left chefing a few times. So first time I started a company, I was running like bars and things through university, Then the bar
in Leeds.
In Leeds, yeah. And then the bar I was working at, the franchise for all the food was up for like kind of grabs. So I phoned the owner, went, can I do it? He said yes. So I started a company called Homegrown. And I did that. And then, you know, I was chefing, I was running my own little thing. That was really, really cool. And then at the end of that, I kind of bought a house with my friend, and then I went into property.
Yeah.
I left chefing then, and then, you know, various times I've kept coming back to it. Right. Always wanting to quit.
So, now, the guys you described at the Sheaf, they sound like kind of a personal influence on the way that you went through. Professionally, who would you say influenced you in that kind of nascent stage of your career? So the kind of bit where you were starting to get the passion for chefing, out of were there any of the big names, for example, or any professional chefs that you kind of went, I want to be like that, or I'm interested in that, or even the other way around and went, that is not for me?
Yeah, all of them was not for me. I think I struggled for ages to find somebody or even work for someone I respected properly. I loved food and I love cooking food, but I liked doing my own way, and then I found it really hard for ages. You work for people and go, you're a prick, you're shit, I don't like that, that's crap. Yeah. You'd see everyone on telly and just think it was just a load of shit. So I don't think it was ever, until a lot later on in my career, you know, talking like when I'm like 27, 28, I actually started seeing people I liked and respected.
Really?
Before that, there was nobody really.
Okay. Bit,
yeah.
Do you think there were, it was an arrogance or just not interested?
I don't know. Maybe it was a lack of understanding on my part of what they were doing.
Okay.
Yeah, maybe it was almost like maybe I didn't understand enough about food to really know what they were doing. So it was almost like you didn't want to ask questions. You just thought it was easier just to say, oh, they're shit, I don't care, than actually really kind of
get it. You kind of, you see the end product and judge it on that, not the process so much.
Yeah, maybe, yeah. I just think it's all a bit wanky.
I should explain the way that we know each other is that we work together at River Cottage. And you were the head chef.
Yeah.
And I was a stupid deputy manager. And so we had fun. The bit we're going to talk about now is the what I would class as the kind of the camaraderie, because what fascinates me about the industry that we work in is it is really, for me, I think tribal. I think if you've worked in it and you like it or you get it or you stick with it, it's something that's very hard to explain or to understand, because it's not like an office job. You don't turn up and then just do 8 hours and you can half-ass it if you want and then go home. You know, if you don't perform, you have got a world of shit, because you've got to deal with people who want to...
It's immediate.
The plus side of that has always been the people that I've worked with have been either people I've loved or hated, or either way, you've been in it together. So who has been the best chef you've worked with, and not necessarily celebrity or thing, but then why? What made them the person that was outstanding? And it could be above you, below you.
Best chef I've worked with? Fuck. There's loads. I think I've worked with loads of actually really, really good chefs. Loads that I admire. There's actually a guy I used to work for in Leeds. I'm still friends with him now. He was good because he was like a... I think he had a bit of an air of arsehole. I think a lot of people thought he was an arsehole.
Faint whiff.
Yeah, he was a big, quite a boisterous bloke. But he kind of... I really got on with him and he looked after me. And actually, when I first met, I was front of house. I was doing some front of house work, and then he invited me into his kitchen. He was like... I really liked his food. He was kind of Michelin stuff, but just ran a really simple. And he was.
So what made him good to work with, actually, on a day-to-day basis?
He didn't give a fuck. Literally, like this guy is charging people silly money, like amazing food, everything. But I liked his attitude of everyone just go fuck himself. He looked after me and looked after everyone around him.
So when you say he looked after you guys, what, in the way that he supported and trained you, or just in...
Yeah, supported us. If anybody would, like, we'd work for a lot of bigger directors. He was like an events company.
Yeah.
Any of the directors would slightly criticise one of us or anything, he'd be straight in there like, ah, no, you can fuck off.
Right.
And, like, you know, really protect all of his team.
So the flip side is, and again, you don't have to name any names, who's the worst chef? And probably a combination, but the worst chef you ever worked with, and what made them so horrendously bad?
Worst chef. I've worked with some fucking mentalists. Like, we've...
Yep.
he's temper tantrums and aggressive.
So, like, some of the worst chefs, I mean, like people who've turned up sloppy drunk, people who've... Oh. Like, personal hygiene.
So, when I worked in Leeds for Jamie's... I used to run a very big brigade, you know, like 25 plus chefs.
Yeah.
And we'd, you know, it's 100 miles an hour all the time. It's brutal. So you go through chefs like shitloads. Yeah. Screaming and shouting and actually physically kicking someone out of the building is fairly every other week. Like, that's regular. And sometimes, like, I'm walking down the main cook line. There was a new guy we got. He's looking a bit stressed and a little bit... So I wanted to kind of make sure he wasn't going to flip out and stab someone or something. Like, you know, it was that kind of it. And I went down there, and it was quite kind of confrontational, like, in his face, just to see what he was up to. And I needed a drink, so I picked a drink up and necked it. And it was just a thing. It was literally mainly JD and Coke. Like,
yeah.
I think most of it was JD, and I just necked it, thinking it was Coke. And then I looked at this bloke and realised there was nothing stressed out about him. He was just pissed off his face. And I was just like, oh man, you've got to get out. You've got to get out. And I was like, shit, now I'm pissed. Stumbling down the cook line. It was... I mean, we used to get drunk a lot in the service and sleep in the laundry. Like, sleep on laundry bags is so comfy. And at like 3 o'clock in the morning, you know, you go back at 7, you're like, I'm not going home.
There's no point, is it?
Yeah.
Well, that actually leads me to something that, again, with the catering lifestyle. So, simple one. What's the longest day you've ever done from start to finish work day?
46 hours.
46 hours? Oh, shit, me, you've over doubled me. I did 21 and that hurt.
Yeah, literally. I did, I remember it was a Monday and a Tuesday at Jamie's. It was in the first 2 weeks, no, first about 3 weeks of opening properly. We had a Monday.
Was this in Leeds, sorry?
Yeah. We did a Monday double and we got absolutely fucking annihilated. We used to stop serving food at 11 and we still had a queue at half past 10 outside door to get people in, and we seated 246. Yeah. But the problem was the next morning on the Tuesday we had a menu change, which meant all the whole menu had to be prepped on the Monday. 7 o'clock we do a cook off, all the staff come in at 8, cook the whole menu off, we open the doors again at 12.
Is that so they have a tasting and a briefing?
Yeah, it's a tasting, a briefing, all that kind of stuff. The restaurant ain't open till 12 anyway, but you know, you've only got 4 hours to prep, and it's like a solid 12 to 11 every day your restaurant's full.
Yeah,
so it was really a big push. The whole menu had to be prepped on the Monday, but we didn't prep it. We were just all hands on the deck just getting slammed. The restaurant was rammed. The exec chef turned up about 8 o'clock in the evening on Monday just to see if we'd got a prop. He was doing the briefing the next day, and I was just like, we're getting dicked on. Like, we are getting fucking dicked on. He just looks at me like, why? He kind of stepped in. I've never seen like the exec chef work like that.
Yeah.
And yeah, we got slammed, and at the end of the service he just went, should we start prepping this menu then? And it was like half past 12 at night, and I was like, yeah. He was like, alright, get three chefs. You got like three
did
chefs.
Did he stay with you as well?
Yeah, to be fair to him, he stayed. Yeah. Well, yeah, he stayed. We prepped all the menu, we got it all ready, did the briefing, but then he went to his hotel at 9 in the morning, whereas the rest of us we're on the road as a double. And you can't replace four chefs. So all of us did a double service on Tuesday.
So four of you did basically 2 solid days.
Sorry, literally didn't leave the kitchen. Didn't leave the kitchen. Christ. My feet were throbbing. I was delusional by lunchtime. You're just like mad.
I've got a young lad I work with at the moment. He's 16.
Yeah.
He's at catering college. Fantastic lad. He came in the kitchen at 15 washing pots, decided he wanted to do chefing, got himself into catering college. He's doing so well. He's learning so much.
Yeah.
We just had Mother's Day, as you know, because I believe you're in a pop-up restaurant.
I did, yeah.
He basically did his first kind of split shift double, which he'd never done before because we only used to do evenings.
Yeah.
And he had like an hour and a half to kill, and he could get a bus home, but he'd have to get a bus straight back again. So he walked around for an hour and a half and then came back. And I give him a lift home in the evening, and he was like, oh, my knees, man. I've been working for 9 hours. Yeah, that was my reaction. But then I remembered, like, when I was 16, that would have probably pissed me off a bit. I mean, I used to do 6-7 hours quite regularly. Yeah. But nine hours, yeah, I guess was funny. But now a long day is kind of, if it's not 16 hours, you kind of go, well, that's fair.
Yeah.
So the 21-hour day for me, that was New Year's Eve.
Yeah.
I started at 8 in the morning, I finished at 5 in the morning. But even after that, and I was absolutely exhausted because we took a phenomenal amount of money. It was so busy. We had lots of drinks trade as well on top. I still needed 20 minutes to chill out. I couldn't go straight to bed. Yeah. So normally it would take half an hour to an hour after a shift for me to get to the point where I could even consider sleeping. Is that a thing for you as well? Do you have that?
Yeah, you need that cave time.
Yeah. What's it called?
Cave time.
All right.
Yeah, I call it cave time. I don't know why, but it's your time to kind of, it's like the gap between the work and rest.
Do you have, for me it was always shitty TV, it was the best of the world. Didn't matter what it
was. Oh, it's still be Family Guy or American Dad, isn't it?
Ah. I used to have late night poker on.
Nice.
Man, it was amazing. I got to know their names. After your 46, I can't believe
I've realised, I actually said 46, it's not, it's 36.
Oh, you're such a pussy.
46 is the, it's 36 because it's two doubles and a night shift.
So yeah. 12, 12, 12, 36,
yeah.
Still pretty hardcore, man.
Yeah, it's horrendous.
Did you literally just go and collapse afterwards?
Yeah, but your brain's wired.
Yeah.
I used to cycle in as well, so I cycled home.
I always used to find that was really good because it was like a physical outlet. Even though you were tired, you still had to kind of get that. Yeah,
I loved that. Yeah, cycling home was really good. You got real, real sweaty,
and it was usually cold as well, which was nice at first.
Yeah, you cool down for a bit, and then you get home, and then you're like, wow.
Worst thing you can ever do in a kitchen is have a fridge temperature that shows the outside temperature as well, because it just makes you feel bad.
Yeah, right.
We did that once. It got up to 39 degrees. We're like, right, turn that fucking thing off.
Yeah. Just rubbing it in your face.
Yeah. All right. We're kind of going a bit all over the place. So you've done front of house, but I know you as a chef.
Yeah.
And certainly, I'd say with the, you know, where your career is now, that is distinctly
I can't where you are back.
Yeah. So over the years, how's your relationship been with front of house as in terms of working with them in different places?
It's up and down. I think because I've done front of house, I think I kind of get on with it. But then sometimes you just fall out. I mean, it's lots of people say, "Oh yeah." I always work really well with that back house or back house there. Or they work really well front of house. It's always a tight team. But sometimes it doesn't be quite a tight team, is it? Sometimes they're always a little bit of like...
A little bit of friction.
Yeah. But other than that, I think...
Where do you think the issues come from with front of house and back of house?
It's just bad communication. It's a lot of the time, it's... You don't work... The same teams aren't working all the time. That's a major issue. So it's always somebody slightly different. So you're not used to the way people are doing things.
And it's not a rapport or anything.
And that, after a while, that builds up and it's easy. When I was in Leeds a lot, you'd got to know it was very, very structured, those restaurants. So only people talk in the kitchen. Like, there's like three people that are allowed to talk to the kitchen, and there's only three chefs that are allowed to talk to the front of the house. So those six bond, and then it works really, really well.
What's the thing that you think, what are the mistakes that front of house are most guilty of making?
Oh, being stupid.
See, that's a chef talking.
Hiding mistakes. I think a lot of the time, actually, younger like waiters, waitresses, hiding mistakes, being scared of...
Instead of just saying, this is what I've done, let's sort it out.
Just hiding it and then pretending and making up stories and just making the situation 10 times worse, and then everything just gets like, this is fucking ridiculous.
You're quite a fan of gadgets, and how do you feel about working with electronic ordering systems, so you know, where you get your ticket printed in the kitchen? EPOS
like systems are a little bit, it depends. I think on mass they're brilliant, on mass and some systems are really good. The majority of them are all shit, time consuming, don't work very well,
nobody bothers calibrating them properly for stock.
Yeah nobody sets them up properly, so what they're actually meant for, everyone just kind of bodges it, and then it actually slows the process down so much because special orders nobody understands, they're still going backwards and forwards to the kitchen.
The worst ones are the tickets, So your actual dish is in black, so yeah. Say like pork. And then any addendums, any additions are in red, and you'd get one that'd be 15 lines.
Oh, man. I've had ones I thought the till roll was going to run out. It's like,
have you ever had that, though? That is the most bitching thing in the middle of a service. So I worked with you for just about a year.
Yeah.
And I never saw you do, I'm sure you got pissy, but I never saw you do a chef tantrum.
No.
Have you ever done a chef tantrum? Have you ever lost it?
No.
Really?
Never. I mean, I think, let's say Leeds was a boisterous kitchen and I used to scream and shout chef, but that's never losing it. It's always very controlled aggression.
Sure.
It's aggressive, but it's never kind of flap up my arms and kicking shit.
Yeah.
No, I've never lost it at all.
And also it was appropriate for the environment.
Yeah, it was the kind of the way the kitchens worked.
Have you worked for chefs where it hasn't been appropriate for the environment, where you have been, where you've had the full brunt of somebody's fury?
Yeah. When you're a kid, it just looks like bounces off.
I used to be terrified. So the guys I worked for at the first hotel I was at. So they used to have these noise rounds, and it had just a swing door for the kitchen, and literally guests would hear, "You fucking," and then the door closed and you wouldn't hear anything. And I remember the ones that were going to train me front of house, and he started telling me how to make a pot of tea, and I was a bit sarky, went, "Oh, the tea goes in the teapot," and he was like, "Wait, you don't fucking want to fucking learn," and I literally shat myself. Well, not literally, let's take that back. I did not literally shit myself. I found it really horrible.
Yeah,
but it was only when I was about 14, 15 that I kind of worked out how to deal with it, which was, don't answer back, just get on with it.
Yeah.
But I, up until I was 16, I worked with absolute fucking arsehole chefs, the classic kind of tantrum.
Yeah.
And a couple of them, like I worked in a Greasy Spoon, you know, a chef who just was not happy. He was not doing what he should have been doing. And I made him so angry, he threw OXO cubes at me. And that really hurt.
He threw OXO cubes.
Well, I can't remember what I did, but obviously, I mean, it must have been some pretty big fucker.
Yeah.
But the only other thing he had near him were his knives. And even in his rage, he knew he couldn't throw knives at a 15-year-old. So he picked up the next thing he had, and he had a load of stock cubes, and he just threw them at me. And they're pointy.
Yeah.
No, I've never seen a physical fight in a kitchen, though. Never had that.
I have. Yeah, a few times. I've seen, actually, a chef. So there's a famous restaurant called The Angel in Dartmouth. And then they hired this other very, very, very big chef to come in. And he was fucking angry. So he really knew what he was doing. He's a actually lovely guy. But I was going to be the head chef there, and he was like an exec chef. And I saw him, a veg man, put the veg delivery on the right-hand side, and he wanted it on the left-hand side in his kitchen. Like, we're talking about 50 centimetres.
Yeah.
This guy flipped, grabbed the veg and threw it across the restaurant, and there's no customers in at the moment, just lobbed it and went mental. I was about to beat the crap out of this guy, and I used to flip out with, like, if the cling film was like too far one way on the shelf, and like really, really, really fucking anal, like I couldn't work with it, and I just, you know, left and just didn't take the job. I was on like a 5-day trial shift. What a fucking arsehole.
One of my favourite all time experiences, and it's happened pretty much everywhere I've worked, at least at one point, somebody going, "Fuck this," and walking out in the middle of service.
Oh, right.
Happened much in the kitchen?
Loads.
Have you ever done it?
I've never walked out. I've always had, like, in fact, when I was younger, I was like, I fucking hate this, this is bullshit, I'm not doing this, this is bullshit. And that goes through your mind for like 10 years, like, well, you know, all bullshit. I later found out a way of changing it, and you kind of distract your brain a little bit.
Yeah.
I've never walked out. I think I've tried walking out. I said I'm going to do it, but it's always like an empty threat. I don't think it's in me to...
I couldn't do it during service. I could walk away after service.
Yeah.
But like, you can't do it to the other people you're with.
No, exactly.
But also, it's a pride as well.
Yeah. Yeah, you give it your all, whatever.
Yeah. But I had somebody walk out. I had my second chef walk out on me in August with no notice. Just walk out in the middle of service over being asked to pass a cake mold.
Yeah.
And that was it. That was it. And it was, that person had enough. Okay, so...
People walking out. Yeah. I've had literally have loads, like literally in Leeds. We have it in their contract at the restaurant in Leeds.
Yeah.
If you walk out mid-service, you get paid £1 since your last paycheck. So if you're 3 weeks
in... Can you do that?
Yeah, people signed it. It was written in their contract and people signed it, and that happens a lot.
Fucking hell.
And you'd have to remind people, which says they walk out the door, because you fucking need them, that you realise we're 3 weeks into the month, you're going to get paid, so you're going to lose like 700 quid, 800 quid at least.
Did you used to brick it if it was in week one then?
Fuck! Fuck!
Okay, on to something we've touched on already, the hours.
Yeah.
And the kind of balance. It's not like any other job because, you know, in 3 days, you will do what most people will do for a normal working week.
Yeah.
You know, 35 hours over 3 days is pretty standard. How have you kind of managed with that? So, because, I mean, what kind of hours were standard for you 5 years ago?
Leeds... I could do 100-hour weeks.
Yeah.
Like, that would be...
So, physically, how did you cope with that? Like...
Actually, I coped with it near the end by being fitter. So, cycling to work, on my days off going running. Like, it was mad. Like, we've started, like, a culture in that kitchen of the only way you're going to get through this is actually by being physically... The days of, like, big fat chefs, if you were slightly overweight, you couldn't survive.
Okay, a bit of a weird one, but did you eat at work? Yeah, how did you manage your eating, and did you used to have 3 meals a day?
No, definitely not. No chef has 3 meals a day. You pick. It depends on where you work, but generally, you almost don't eat. You pick and scrounge as and when, and you eat like a horse on your days off.
Do you eat at catering speed as well?
Oh yeah, you eat standing up and you just shovel it in your face. Like, literally shove it in, walk around, chewing it.
Have you ever been out for dinner and you've noticed that you're eating at 15 times the speed of other people and you've had to reel it back in so you don't look like an animal?
And I'm stood up at the table.
Just holding the steak in your hand, going, yeah, it's about right.
Effing and blinding. Happens all the time.
Yeah, it does. You mentioned days off. Do you cook, or no, not now, sorry, did you used to cook on your days off at home?
Yeah, I think I was a little bit different and a bit weird. I always cooked on my day off.
Okay.
A lot of chefs have microwavable meals and frozen pizzas. Because I think the way my career's gone backwards and forwards from chefing so much.
Yeah.
I love it, and I really, really love it, and this is what I do. So it's cooking on my days off is what I do. But that's becoming more the older I get.
Right.
I think when I was younger, it was, I cook a bit. But when you're younger, you're kind of single and you're cooking for one person. As you get older, you're cooking for your girlfriend. Sure. You've got more of a social aspect of it.
Did you ever, I mean, when you flipped, as you put it, like kind of between chefing, front of house and property and things like that, did you ever kind of lose the passion for food?
I don't worry about it ever happening. I think... I never lost the love of food. I just lost the love of the hours. When you're a junior chef, you're working ridiculous hours. You get paid literally nothing. Like, it's really, really hard to make any kind of ends meet. And all your mates are off at the weekends. You know, they've gone to university with you. And then they're doing their 9 to 5 and on the career path. And you're like, you know, busting your balls, earning nothing. Going, this is ridiculous. I'd go and be a shitty recruitment because I'm fucking more money than this.
I think it's something a lot of people fail to appreciate and you really nailed it as well, is how physical the job is.
Yeah.
It's like, I mean, it's like so many things. I mean, there's a scale. Is you spend so many years working phenomenally hard for basically nothing.
Yeah.
And then suddenly you get to the point where you tell other people to work really, really hard for basically nothing, and you seem to get rewarded. But it's... You know, like from front of house perspective, the difference in pay between team leader, shift manager, deputy, general manager is phenomenal.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, because the all but the last one are quite low pay. You know, I mean, have you ever done that thing where you've worked out your hourly rate?
Yeah, well, that's how it works. It's always when you're, say, for front of house and chefing, once you get from the per hour to the salary position, actually you go up a grade but you get paid less, and that's always a fucking bastard.
if you work in a normal kitchen, you're hourly, you're the first person to get sent home, you're the person who comes in late on the shift. If you're salaried, you're the first person there, the last person to leave, because they will eke every single
thing. You get fucking roped all over the place. And you don't get, you know, things like tips. I remember, like, we had the biggest, you know, I know front of house that were taking home 30 grand a year, like the basic waiters, waitresses. You know, they had the basic wage plus the tips. They could do £100 a day, easy tips. So they're taking 30 grand home. And they'll be managed by people on a 21, between 21 and 24 grand salary who weren't allowed to.
Worst service you've ever done, individual service that stands out when I say that?
I suppose
so many.
Yeah, I've just had a brain meltdown. Actually, it's got to be, there'd be ones at River Cottage,
the Jubilee weekend. That is, for me, is the most painful one. I remember the fucking cream teas in the middle of it. Do you remember?
Oh God, yeah.
I've just seen you age.
Oh, afternoon teas. Who the fuck decided that?
Your dream kitchen as a chef, so professional kitchen. What is the most essential piece of equipment in it?
A lubricant dispenser
for the bee sting.
Yeah.
Okay. What's the natty piece of kit that you want in your kitchen?
There's two bits of kit I put in every kitchen. It's a Rationale. And
I knew it would be.
And a thermo.
Oh, a thermomixer.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I've got one word written here. We'll see your reaction to it. TripAdvisor.
It's glorious.
Is it a good thing or a bad thing?
I think it's gonna suddenly change soon. I think I've seen the positive sides of it and I've seen the negative sides of it. I'm hoping it's at the moment, it's quite new really to the general public, so hoping it's going to balance out a little bit in a few years.
Have you seen Yelp in America? Because that's negative side of it.
Yeah, I've heard of Yelp.
The thing, like TripAdvisor, it is the best thing in the world and it's the worst thing in the world, easily. Like, the business I had did really well because of TripAdvisor. It ended up getting us so many bookings towards the end of the business's life cycle.
Yeah.
However, because everybody has a voice, it means the nutters have a voice.
Yeah.
And I would certainly say that in this industry, we are creatures of ego. And we are, despite the boisterousness and everything, I think we're all very, very sensitive. Because if somebody criticises our food without being overtly pretentious, they're criticising our art. That is what we do. And so you say, oh, the food was dry, and you know it wasn't, or you've tried to rectify it, because everybody makes mistakes. But I find I obsess. I had 99 good reviews, one bad review, and I'll ignore every fucking good review. And I will look at the profile of the one star. I'll find out where they live. I'll look at the other places they've eaten. I'll see the other reviews.
How many reviews they've done.
Yeah, absolutely. And you go for it. But I think the laugh gave me the reaction I wanted.
Fucking hate TripAdvisor.
Last thing we're going to do. What's the difference between a chef and a cook? Are you familiar with the term Jeff?
No.
So I had a couple of customers who I wouldn't describe them as my friends, but they're really into food. It's like, my wife, she bakes every day, and she uses herbs that you can only get from specialist markets, that kind of thing. And nice. The best ones he bought me.
They're called twats.
No, they're called Jeffs. Because they think they're chefs, they're not. They're just Jeffs. If you put him in a real kitchen, he would sink in a second.
It's a hobby. It's not a real thing.
Okay, the thing I'll end with, how would you react now if your younger self came work for you in your kitchen and you came in? What would you mentor that person, or would you look at him and go, oof?
Yeah, I would. I really enjoyed teaching and mentoring people who want to get into the industry. Yeah, and look after them.
Yeah. He's going places.
Yeah, right. What a legend.
Yeah. 15 quid an hour.
Get him on that. No, that's the one thing I wouldn't do, is pay him £15 an hour. I think sometimes you need to get paid shit money to break through and almost earn your stripes.
I do hope you enjoyed that. That was Chef Sam Rom talking to myself, Chris Wellborn. You can find more information about Sam at chefsamrom.com or on Twitter at chefsamrom. This has been a BDP production, copyright 2015.